This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Sohib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
As anti-French sentiment has grown, as skepticism has grown, and as people have grown increasingly concerned and frustrated with the security situation, that blame has fallen, oftentimes fairly or not, on the traditional partners, on the current partners.
That's Andrew Leibovitz with the European Council on Foreign Relations on why support for Russian intervention is growing in Burkina Faso. Details coming up. Also, the death toll in three southern African countries from Tropical Storm Anna has risen to 70. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Burkina Faso's coup leaders have yet to say if they will install a civilian or a military leader after deposing President Roch Kabore, who has since resigned formally. In an exclusive interview with VOA, U.S. Ambassador to Burkina Faso, Sandra Clark, says if the military installs its own leader, Washington could cut support to Burkina Faso, as Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
In the exclusive interview, Ambassador Sandra Clark said the United States is closely monitoring the situation.
We are carefully evaluating the events on the ground for any possible impact on our assistance. This is a very fluid situation and things are evolving. However, I would note that U.S. law does require a review and possible suspension of assistance in cases where a democratically elected government is deposed by unconstitutional means.
The junta has yet to announce whether it plans to install a military or a civilian president as the new ruler. If a civilian is selected, it may mean a continuation of support from the United States, which has provided counterterrorism training to Burkinabe troops as well as funding. Ambassador Clark says the US would like to see democratic rule restored.
We have called for the immediate release of President Kabore and other government officials, and for a return to civilian-led government and constitutional order. And we urge all sides to remain calm and to seek dialogue to address grievances.
Burkina Faso has been locked in a six-year conflict with armed groups linked to Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, and local bandits. The military has suffered a string of significant defeats to the groups in recent months. France also has a special forces unit stationed in the country and provides air and intelligence support to the Burkinabe military. Meanwhile, there's widespread agreement among Burkinabes that the status quo with the country's current military partners needs to change. More than 1,000 people attended a demonstration Tuesday in the capital, Ouagadougou. Speakers called for military support, which has occurred in neighbouring Mali in recent weeks. Alexander Ivanov, the official representative of Russian military trainers in the Central African Republic, issued a statement offering training to the Burkinabe military on Tuesday. Analyst Andrew Leibovitz with the European Council on Foreign Relations was asked by VOA why support for Russian intervention is growing.
As anti-French sentiment has grown, as skepticism has grown, and as people have grown increasingly concerned and frustrated with the security situation, that blame has fallen, oftentimes fairly or not, on the traditional partners, on the current partners.
There has been no further word on the whereabouts of former President Kabore, whom the military arrested on Monday. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the UN has been monitoring the situation in Tunisia with concern, and he hopes to see the full restoration of an institutional democratic framework that works for all. He points out that the democratic revolution in Tunisia inspired hope around the world, and he wants it preserved. Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi whether clear and unambiguous language from Guterres means the situation in Tunisia needs international pressure.
Yes, I think it does. Tunisia does need more international pressure and support, particularly from the community of democracies. You know, Tunisia has actually been receiving quite a bit of pressure from countries like the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, who do not want to see a return to the democratic path. But the West, the United States, European Union, the UN, have been inconsistent in their response and have been relatively benign. For example, expressing support for the roadmap that Saeed announced in December, which is clearly unconstitutional and does not provide for an inclusive path forward.
Judging from President Saeed's political thinking and his violation of the 2014 constitution, is Tunisia moving rapidly towards a presidential rather than a parliamentary system of government?
It certainly looks that way. I think Saeed has been pretty clear since long before his election that he favors a stronger presidency and he's not a fan of the parliamentary system. The challenge, though, is there's really been a complete lack of transparency. We don't know who Saeed is going to task to draft the new constitution or what that document will look like. That being said, I do think it's pretty likely that the next phase of Tunisian politics will have a greatly diminished role for the parliament.
Tunisian President Kais Saied believes that he is waging a clean war against corruption and those conspiring against him and the country. He has not yet realized the seriousness of the violations that accompany the decisions and the measures that he has taken. What's the way out in Tunisia?
I think there is no question that Tunisia needs to address the endemic corruption that continues to plague the country 11 years after the revolution. However, Saeed's method, which has been to go after his political opponents, to use military courts to try civilians, this is not an effective method if you want to get at more stability. What he's doing is, in fact, lead to greater instability and greater unrest. In effect, Saeed has really been reintroducing a police state where we've seen bloggers who criticize the government thrown in jail. Instead, what he needs to be doing is introducing transparency measures, as well as focusing on economic reforms that could help lift up all Tunisians, not just those who support the president.
So will Tunisia witness another uprising?
I don't think we're going to see another full-on revolution, but I do think the next several months are going to be critical for Tunisia. We are seeing Saeed really hemorrhage support. More and more people, whether they're civil society organizations, individuals, political parties, they're starting to realize that Saeed is not the answer to their problems. What that looks like, whether that leads to more protests, whether that leads to some sort of consultative process, some sort of dialogue, I don't know. But certainly what we're seeing right now is a lot of recognition that what Saeed's doing is not actually helping Tunisia get to where it needs to be.
That was Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, speaking with my colleague, Mohammed Al-Shenawi. The death toll in three southern African countries from tropical storm Ana has risen to 70, 41 in Madagascar, 18 in Mozambique, and 11 in Malawi. Remnants of the storm have passed over Zimbabwe, but no deaths have been reported there. The French news agency AFP reports 110,000 people had to flee their homes in Madagascar. In the capital Antananarivo, dozens of schools and gyms are serving as emergency shelters. In neighboring Malawi, the government has declared a state of natural disaster. Most of the country lost electricity earlier in the week, but power has been restored to some areas. Madagascar and southern Africa, especially Mozambique, have suffered repeated destructive storms in recent years. Botswana's National Assembly is debating a proposal to let law enforcement agents secretly record citizens' phone and enjoy immunity from prosecution for doing so. Analysts warn that proposal poses a threat to democracy. From Habrone, reporter Mukandisi Dube has the details.
Minister of Defense, Justice and Security Kahisom Musin brought the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act bill before the National Assembly. It would allow the tapping of civilians' telephone calls by investigating officers who would be empowered to use assumed identities to obtain identity cards and travel documents. But the bill has riled opposition members and human rights activists who say it would erode civil liberties. Criminal law expert Khosi Ngakagae says the bill should not be allowed to pass in its current form.
Molao is the end of our democracy as we have known it. Of that, I have absolutely no doubt. I've gone through this legislation.
I do not have a problem with undercover investigations. There is no objection in principle with undercover investigation. The main concern is tapping of phones and assumed identities. With assumed identity, it means investigating authorities can obtain false identity cards and passports.
Opposition legislator Neva Tsabang accuses the Intelligence Service, the Directorate of Intelligence Services, DIS, of being rogue and therefore should not be allowed to bug citizens' conversations.
DIS has been a rogue state and is still a rogue state. Nothing has changed. DIS is not accounting to anyone as we speak, and they're still not accounting to anyone. When we have a rogue organization like that, they are going to go beyond what we think is a legitimate case for Hotepa Difoom. They've already demonstrated DIS has even gone to defy the court's ruling. So how it has gone to defy the court's ruling, and what assurance do we have for it? They are not going to defy the court's ruling using this clause.
Legislator David Stere says opponents have raised objections.
This law will provide immunity for the investigating officers. We raised our concerns. We had agreed that the responsible minister would have to withdraw this bill and go back to refine it.
The ruling party holds 39 seats in parliament to the opposition's 18. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dwayne Habroni, Botswana.
An award-winning Ugandan author accused of insulting the president and his son has been taken to the hospital after being freed a day after he was snatched while being released from prison. Aaron Kiza, the lawyer for Kakuwenza Rakira Basaija, whose case has triggered international concern, told AFP he was dumped by the military at his country home in eastern Uganda after being held at a military police barracks. His bail conditions include not speaking to the media. Kiza says Kakuwenza is weak and has been tortured during the month he had been held after his arrest. A court on Tuesday had ordered the novelist's release on bail, but Kiza says he was kidnapped from prison several hours later by armed men in plain clothes. Nigeria this month lifted a seven-month-long ban on Twitter, but critics say the economic damage from blocking the microblogging platform amounts to billions of dollars in lost businesses. A Nigerian activist group has filed a lawsuit against the government over damages from the ban. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Online computer dealer Muhammad Maitanu has nearly 30,000 followers on Twitter and says he normally makes around $4,500 every month from sales of his computers and other office accessories. Maitanu says that being blocked on Twitter for months was a big setback.
75% of my business income comes from Twitter. Banning Twitter is one of the catastrophic events that happened to us, online vendors. Actually, we lost a huge amount of investment and profit during this time. We suffer a lot.
Nigerian authorities lifted a seven-month ban on Twitter last week. The ban was imposed in June of last year, barely 24 hours after Twitter deleted a message from President Muhammadu Buhari to separatist groups that made reference to Nigeria's 1960s civil war, in which an estimated 1 million people were killed. In imposing the ban, authorities blamed Twitter for promoting comments that could incite public unrest in Nigeria. This week, the Lagos Chamber of Commerce said the ban cost Nigeria about $26.1 billion. Victoria Akai, the Director General of Abuja Chapter of the Nigeria Chamber of Commerce, agrees.
A lot of Nigerians do business on Twitter, right? And they make a lot of income. And this income, some of it is taxable. So yes, definitely there is a very, very possible likelihood that Nigeria lost that amount of money from banning Twitter.
Despite the end of the ban, an activist group, the Socioeconomic Rights and Accountability Project, SERAP, is calling on authorities to compensate citizens like Meitano who incurred economic losses. The group filed a lawsuit against the government this week at the Court of Regional Bloc ECOWAS in Abuja. Kolawole Olawale is the group's deputy director general.
And our position remains the same. The ban shouldn't have been done in the first place because it's unlawful. Millions of Nigerians have been victims who have lost not only in pecuniary terms but in other terms as well during the period of the ban. So we intend to seek compensation for those victims through the courts to make sure there is some form of remediation.
Nigeria's Information Minister Lai Mohammed did not respond to requests from VOA to comment on the lawsuit. The ECOWAS court is scheduled to hear the case on January 31. In the meantime, many vendors like Meitano have resumed their online marketing and will be trying to recover lost revenue. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Amid allegations that he turned a blind eye when his party corruptly used government money to fund its campaigns, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has been given 10 days by a parliamentary committee to explain. In a leaked recording of a party meeting, Ramaphosa is heard admitting that he knew public funds were being used to fund some ANC activities. A member of the ruling African National Congress who reported the matter to the committee has been suspended, but it wants to hear from Ramaphosa. Tuso Kubalo has more on the story.
In the audio from what seems to be a party meeting, a voice resembling that of Ramaphosa is heard responding to those accusing his party presidential campaign of using state funds directly or indirectly. The speaker says he knows that other people were also using state funds for party campaigns. He further says he would be happy to be openly accused of using state funds for his campaign, but that similar claims about the ANC could damage the image of the party. ANC legislator Mervin Dyke wrote to Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Public Accounts, accusing Ramaphosa of committing a crime. Yesterday, Dyke spoke to the committee, urging it to investigate the president.
What President Ramaphosa stated in the audio clip is that he has knowledge about what is clearly the abuse or misappropriation of public funds. In short, what the president admitted to is that he is committing a crime by not having reported this act of criminality that is known to him.
Dyke, who has been suspended from the ANC for reporting his party president to the finance watchdog, told the committee that he does not regret his decision. Committee chairperson Nkululeko Hlengwa told members that after consultation with Parliament's legal team, they decided to ask Ramaphosa to make presentations to the committee.
Let us write to the president to solicit and establish facts and that explanation or written response or statement or affidavit from the president in this regard will lay the foundation on the nature and shape of our investigation into this matter.
South Africa is currently processing reports from the commission which investigated corruption from the last decade. The report fingers several ANC officials who allegedly facilitated and benefited from corrupt deals that cost the state millions of dollars. Ramaphosa has not been directly linked to any of the corruption and is yet to be seen if these new allegations will stick. So far, Ramaphosa has not responded to the allegations. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Investigators in South Africa have recommended that hundreds of people be prosecuted for corruption and other financial crimes linked to contracts for protective gear during the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic. Those implicated include government officials from the ruling African National Congress, the ANC, who allegedly colluded with private businesses to defraud the state of more than $50 million in 2020 alone. But legal experts doubt whether South Africa's National Prosecuting Authority, the NPA, has the capacity to handle about 400 cases springing from almost 3,000 irregular deals. Darren Taylor reports.
Civil society says work by the Special Investigating Unit, the SIU, shows that President Cyril Ramaphosa's effort to rid the ANC of corrupt officials has barely begun. Many analysts are of the opinion that the party would effectively be destroyed should its leader live up to the promise he made when he succeeded Jacob Zuma in 2018. An SIU report shows that a lot of the PPE sold to government departments was of poor quality, and fly-by-night companies were paid millions of dollars for masks and gloves never delivered.
The people involved in this are not just greedy, they really are murderous.
Advocate Paul Hoffman leads the organization Accountability Now.
They took money that was meant to protect frontline workers, meant to prevent the spread of a pandemic, and used it to enrich themselves at the expense of the frontline workers who were not properly protected against the virus and at the expense of people who were ill because of the virus. It is absolutely unforgivable, and consequences need to flow.
In addition to all the prosecutions it has mooted, the SIU recommends that hundreds of government officials be suspended or fired for their roles in dodgy deals. But the unit says state departments are so far ignoring its findings.
Unfortunately, the situation is that they are not legally obliged to follow the recommendations of the SIU. I think one of the problems with SIU is that there isn't a mechanism to enforce the findings.
Willy Hofmeyer led the SIU and the Asset Forfeiture Unit until Zuma fired him for investigating the then president's allies. Hofmeyer says at the moment, corrupt officials usually only lose their jobs if they're found guilty of a crime in a court of law. But he emphasizes that the SIU isn't toothless, especially when it uses a special corruption tribunal.
It can sue all those people at the tribunal, all the people that they have found guilty. They can take them to the tribunal. The tribunal can make rulings to deprive them of the proceeds of their actions. But it is a much longer process than doing it through the Asset Forfeiture Unit or through the NPA directly.
Hoffman says the SIU report shows that the culture of impunity in the ANC government did not end when Ramaphosa ousted Zuma at the party's national conference in late 2017.
The nature of the crime that is apparent in the report of the SIU is really quite beyond the pale, and there's going to be a lot of work for a lot of institutions.
But legal experts agree that the NPA, for one, doesn't have the resources to do a lot of this work. They say Ramaphosa needs to give it more and fast. Otherwise, the SIU's report will stay on paper with the guilty escaping punishment. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Egypt has booked a quarterfinal place at the Africa Cup of Nations with a 5-4 shootout victory over Ivory Coast yesterday. Seven-time winner Egypt will now face North African rival Morocco in an enticing quarterfinal clash on Sunday. In other matches yesterday, Equatorial Guinea continued its giant killing run, reaching the quarterfinals with a 6-5 penalty shootout victory over Mali. Mali, the overwhelming favorite, turned in an underwhelming performance. Next for Guinea will be confrontation with Senegal on Sunday. You can get more of the Africa Cup of Nations coverage from the sunny side of sports. Listen at voanews.com or find the show wherever you get your podcasts. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehye Suhin in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.